Hey there, MuggleCast listeners! I am back to inform you of some excellent news. GoDaddy.com is having better deals than ever. For only $3.59 a month for 12 months, you can get GoDaddy.com's Economy Package. And with 250 gigs of bandwidth, 5 gigs of storage, and up to 500 email accounts, you can get your own website up and running with success. And as usual, enter code MUGGLE, that's M-U-G-G-L-E, when you check out, and save an additional 10% on any order. Some restrictions apply. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
Because Jamie is back on the show this week.
Enough said.
This is MuggleCast episode 94 for June 12th, 2007.
All right, last week we had three co-hosts. Now we have a pretty big show. Jamie's finally back.
Yep.
It's about time.
Hold on a sec. Who was the three last week? Who were the three?
It was me, Laura, and Micah. Don't you listen to the show?
Ben, don't you? Come on.
Oh, of course. I'm just kidding. I was just clarifying for the fans, guys.
Okay. Ben's also back. Not that anyone cares at this point anymore, but Ben is back. And
that hurts, Andrew.
I care.
I'm sorry. This is just a whole big group. Jamie, I got an email this week.
Yes.
Not everyone's so happy about your return.
Oh, no.
It says, Jamie on show next week. That's the subject line. And it says, I don't think Jamie should be on the show next week. I've been doing it without him. Andrew, if you ever leave the show for a month, I'd probably cry. See, I'm crying just thinking about it. You're always my favorite.
Does this person happen to be from Medford, New Jersey?
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Who's it from?
It's from Sarah.
Yeah,
from
who's what?
It doesn't say anything. It's just from Sarah.
Well, Sarah, if you're too scared to even put your name and you know where you're from, then I couldn't even begin to respond to such a sort of anonymous threat. I mean, I only respond to people who are you know, clever enough and brave enough to put their credentials down. So if you ever feel like actually, you know, providing an adequate response, you know, email me, jamie@staff.muggleweb.com. Or if you're too scared to do that, you could email Andrew and talk about me behind my back. Feel free. Thanks, Sarah.
Actually, she sent the PS. She was just kidding.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
Sarah, I hate people who put their credentials down. I just like anonymous cool responses from people called Sarah. It's a beautiful name, in fact. I bet you're a beautiful girl. Beautiful name for a beautiful girl. And I like your email address as well. So if you ever feel like, you know, I can't think of anything to say.
Keep digging, really, James.
Anyway, yeah, that PS was real.
Oh, this is such a joke. This is a... I'd like to make it known for the record that... this was a massive elephant trap. I've just been put right into this. Yeah. So
anyway, Jamie's back in the United States, and
we have him here in the studio this week.
Yeah, here in the studio.
This is the only way we could get him back on the show. Unfortunately,
yeah,
this is what has become. But anyway, we got a big show for everybody this week. Lots of co-hosts and lots of stuff to discuss. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Ben Shane.
I'm Jamie Lawrence.
I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Laura Thompson.
And I'm Micah Tenenbaum.
Micah Tannenbaum is in the MuggleCast News Center with past week's top Harry Potter news stories. Hey, Micah.
All right, thanks, Andrew. Of course, the big news this week, Scholastic has released the cover art for the deluxe edition of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows here in the U.S. David Saylor, Vice President, Creative Director for Scholastic, described the art, saying, "Set during a highly dramatic sunset, Harry, Hermione, and Ron close in tatters, cling atop a flying dragon in this astonishing artwork created by Mary Grand Prix for the deluxe edition. As mist creeps down towering hillsides to a village below, questions arise about where the trio is headed and what has led them to this spellbinding moment. The book will contain 816 pages compared to 784 pages in the regular edition and will cost $65. 100,000 copies are being printed. Speaking of Mary Grand Prix, the American Harry Potter illustrator recently spoke in an interview about her coveted job and a little about the Deathly Hallows cover. On whether people pester her for inside info on the books, Mary says, "Not really so much. I think people just know that I can't talk about it." She says the cover of Book 7 is probably her favorite and thinks it's fun to see the reaction from people. "The fans that are really diehard fans look very closely at the artwork. I try to make everything have a meaning," she says. "There's a reason why something is in the illustration. I don't just put it in because it looks better. It really does have to have a meaning, or part of the story has to support it." And in a new interview, Harry Potter movie director David Heyman discussed how he can't wait for the release of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. On his life post-Potter, he says, "It's a combination of sadness and excitement, I think, for Joe and for all of us. This world has become a huge part of millions and millions of people's lives. We all love it so much, and I think afterward, there'll be a little hole in our lives for a while." But not everyone is crazy for the release of the seventh book. A new article examines how some major retail chains have implemented huge discounts for the last Harry Potter book, causing them to earn minimal profit. According to the article, they are literally not going to make one penny out of the book. It is stupid, just throwing money away. The world has gone mad. From book to movie news, Electronic Arts and Warner Brothers Digital Distribution have announced a Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix video game specially designed for mobile phones. The game is being developed at EA Mobile's UK studio and is expected to be available from UK cell providers beginning on June 15th. The game won't be available in the US, however, until June 26th. And from July 6th through July 8th, ABC will air the first three Harry Potter films and feature never-before-seen clips from the Order of the Phoenix film. Sorcerer's Stone will air at 7:30 p.m. on the 6th, Chamber of Secrets at 7 p.m. on the 7th, and Prisoner of Azkaban at 5 p.m. the following day. Finally, MTV has released an article covering all aspects of the growing music genre in the Harry Potter fandom known as Wizard Rock. The article mentioned well-known bands such as Harry and the Potters and Draco and the Malfoys. It goes on to say that Wizard Rock has become its own genre. That's all the news for this June 11th, 2007 edition of MuggleCast. Back to the show.
All right, thank you, Micah.
No problem, Andrew.
Okay, so the big news this week, thankfully, because we didn't have a main discussion, was the deluxe United States cover art came out today, Friday. Although the show will be out later in the week. And we will be talking about that in a minute. But first, we wanted to get everyone else's reactions to the theme park, specifically Jamie, Ben, and Eric. Jamie, what are your thoughts on this new theme park? As someone who lives in England, will you be going to the theme park?
Well, it's in America, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah, well, yeah. I probably won't be making a special trip out to go to it, but I think it's a cool idea, but it's quite a big thing just for Harry Potter, you know. I mean, I wouldn't ever see a Star Wars theme park, but I'm sure there has been one, and someone's going to email in and say that there's a big
famous one.
Rides. Yeah, but there's been rides, but there's a huge difference between doing an entire theme park based on Harry Potter and one based on, you know, one ride. And after Harry Potter dies in 5 years, and I'm sorry to everyone, but it is going to, you know, eventually, and they have this $400 million theme park. What are they going to do with it?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think that's an issue.
Do you think most foreigners would be interested in coming over to Universal Studios?
I'm sure there'd be some like crazy wild fans who would do it.
I think some will, yeah, because I mean, some people go over to see Equus in London for a special trip. Not that you're a crazy wild fan if you do that, because
the American
it's
fans are
awesome,
a little crazier.
That's a really good point, Jamie.
Eric, you traveled to New Zealand, so I mean, you know, I'm sure you'll be going to the theme park. But
absolutely,
is it worth a special trip? I mean, it's going to be awesome, and you know, but how sort of canon is it going to be? Are we going to go there and see all the stuff from the books, or do they have a huge creative license about it?
That's actually the real question, Jamie, and you snagged it right on the head. Is that you know, how canon is it going to be? Is there going to be like Seamus's slippery slide, or you know things that actually you know. Are there actually going to be a ride, you know, a big roller coaster called Lord Voldemort? You know, are they going to do that kind of stuff, or is it going to be kind of cheesy? Like, I think
they're going to have to, in order to make it more attractable, they're going to have rides like Lord Voldemort's scary roller coaster. I mean, that's an excellent name for it. I'm sure that's what they're going to use.
Travel the world to go on that, I tell you.
I'm actually, guys, I just recently built a Harry Potter theme park in Roller Coaster Tycoon. because I still play Roller Coaster Tycoon.
I love that game.
I love that game. It's the best game ever. Shout out to that. And Chris Sawyer, the creator. But so I came up with a few ride listings for last week's show. I ended up not being on it. I have a whole list of rides I was thinking about. But basically, there's a lot of names and there's a lot of cool things they could do from the books. They could have a big roller coaster called Expelliarmus or something, you know, just something like that. And that's the kind of stuff I would like to see. But being as they're doing Hogsmeade, and I guess you guys discussed this last week, you know, what do you think they'll actually be? Do you think there'll be a sweet shop that they'll call Honeydukes, and you know, you'll be able to?
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean,
that would be the best play on the actual series. So I think it's actually going to be like that.
Laura, Mike, and I were talking about the conceptual art for this park, and by the looks of it, there weren't many rides in the form of like a roller coaster. It didn't look like there was going to be many big rides.
Which
so
is
getting
upsetting.
Back to what. Yeah, well,
I think response. Who's it going to be aimed at? It's obviously a family thing because it's already down there in Florida, so.
Yeah, well, right. So is Vegas. Yeah. Vegas is a family destination, too.
Not the same.
Would you take your 4-year-old son to go and go on?
Well, no,
poker
no, but Vegas is seriously the family number one family destination in the world. That's what they're trying to be. That was their image for years. I'm just saying.
Okay, good. Saying,
I thought it was just drunken gamblers.
Well, it is.
It is.
And us.
and us. But
yeah. Any other thoughts about it? I guess
it's cool, but it's one of those huge projects which you think they've obviously done loads of research into it, and people are obviously going to want it because you can't spend $300 million if people don't want to go. So. People, you know, there's obviously going to be huge demand for it, and people will go because it is a very novel idea. It's just, you know, it's going to be successful because it has to be, or you can't, you know, build something like that.
Also, guys, remember, J.K. Rowling has been in talks with them since the beginning, like for years now.
Right.
That's what the news
says. It's going to be very real to the books. I think we definitely know that. Just the question is, what kind of rides is there going to be at this point?
Yeah.
Well, didn't one of the papers report that they were keeping some of the rides from what's currently there right now and that they were going to try and change them over to be Harry Potter?
Yeah, that upsets me too. They're just going to take some old roller coasters and try and rename them like...
Well, if they can get away with that...
If they can do
it... Space Mountain and call it...
I mean...
The... Apparition Magician.
Yeah.
I'd go on that.
How does that relate? Okay, whatever.
No, because, you know, that's like recycling old things. I don't know.
I think the purpose of that would be trying to save money. I mean, because people are still going to ride it. If they took Space Mountain, called it Harry Potter's Space Mountain, everyone would go on it. Every Harry Potter fan would go on it.
No, totally.
Well, exactly, yeah.
I'm not exactly against that idea. I just think they should also build new rides as well. Like, I mean, even if they wanted to go beyond canon and do some really cool rides, like, you know how in the books, at least in the early ones, Neville is always looking for his toad, Trevor? So I was thinking, you know...
Find Trevor's toad.
Trevor's trail or something, you know, and just like, you know, you're on this ride and you're trying to find Trevor for Neville or something, you know, just like cool ideas like that.
Laura, did you have an idea?
Well, I was just going to say that I don't see any problem with them recycling rides. I mean, that's kind of what you have to do with these theme parks. That's what they're doing to, I mean, that's what they do to create a whole bunch of the stuff you see there. A lot of stuff that was originally part of Universal Studios has since been replaced, and they don't use all of the original parts either. They will put in new stuff, but it's mostly just to use the space.
Well, still, I don't think if you're going to do it, anything worth doing is worth doing right. And especially in Harry Potter's case, this park is going to be big, and they have a chance to make it really big and really cool. Not just half cool, not just almost cool. They have a really good chance to. I mean, this is going to be after Book 7, after maybe even after Movie 7. They're going to have nothing to, you know, not much to do, so they can really do it correct. They could do it right.
Okay.
I have a question.
If they had a ride called Avada Kedavra, and you had a 1 in 15 chance of dying if you went on this ride, but it was absolutely awesome. It was the biggest thrill of your life. It was amazing.
Would you do it?
Would you do it? I would. I mean, come on, you know.
I like my odds. I would just go.
Jamie, I like those odds.
I'd rather it was 10 to 1.
I would go in groups of 14, though. If there's a 1 in 15 chance of dying, I would go in groups.
If 14 of you went, I mean, there'd still be a 1 in 15 chance of dying.
There's a joke in there somewhere. It's just it wasn't the time.
That would be an easy way to clean up the MuggleNet staff. We just took a group trip down there and then all went on that ride. All right, so moving on to a couple announcements now. Don't forget to vote for us on Podcast Alley. It's sort of a new month. June's getting old, but don't forget to vote for us. We're doing pretty well, so we thank everyone who has voted. Also, a national Wear Your MuggleCast t-shirt day was a great success.
As always.
We have close to 100 submissions from t-shirt day now up on MuggleCast.com in the MuggleNet galleries. So be sure to check those out over at MuggleCast.com. Let's see. It's also Spread MuggleCast Month. Did everyone know this?
No.
Jamie hasn't been on the show, so I don't even think you know exactly.
We did.
It's Global Spread MuggleCast Month. And on MuggleCast.com, there are several avatars and lots of other things you can get to help promote the show. As we are getting closer to the book release, so it only makes sense to promote the show more, if you know what I'm saying. So that's that. Ben, people only have a week left to sign up for Pickle Pack.
Oh, geez, yeah. Remember, Pickle Pack is... If you're a MuggleCast fan, you want... to join Pickle Pack.
I don't see why, though.
Why?
It's called Pickle Pack.
So you guys, I mean, you guys have been listening to us for, you know, however many episodes. Some people have, you know, we've gotten some new users on there who've been with us, you know, since the late 80s, actually. So very recent
wow,
listeners.
25
but,
years.
But we've got, no, we've got the other, we've got the other listeners who've been with us since, you know, episodes 40, and since the very beginning, who are on Pickle Pack. And so the idea is basically you hear us on the show, you hear us discussing our Harry Potter theories, and so now if you join Pickleback, you get to hear us talk about more about how the show came to be, some bonus content, some bonus footage, maybe in between behind the scenes of MuggleCast, and also our personal lives. And we do weekly video blogs that we do, and it's kind of, you know, just day-to-day life with us, and it gets you to know the people
those
behind.
Those are NC-17, though, so, you know, you need to be careful when you watch those.
Yeah, yeah, but... No, Jamie, so do you want to continue? Do you want to tell them a little bit more about the blogs or just, you know?
No, I think you've summed up everything.
That's about right. So visit picklepack.com today and sign up. We're only taking sign-ups until June 16th. The cost is $30 for those of you in the U.S. and then $50 everywhere else to cover the additional shipping costs for going international. We thank everyone for signing up. It goes to supporting the show for our summer endeavors and the like. So, because we're all poor college kids. So that's that. Anyway, a couple weeks ago, I promised that my next Wizard Rock single would be on, what was it, episode 92. I'm going to play it here on this week's show in preparation for Prophecy 2007, which is coming up August 1st to the 5th, I think. Or
I think it
6th?
Was the 2nd through the 5th.
2nd through the 5th,
yeah.
Close enough.
Yeah,
that's when we're
going to
be there. I forgot.
Yeah.
I keep getting them confused. Anyway, I was a little unclear about what the Wizard Rock event at Prophecy is going to be, and Jade, the head of Prophecy 2007, emailed me and asked me to clear this up, and she just wanted me to say that, well, from their website, the Common Room Wizard Rock event is a time for Harry Potter fans to gather in the comfort of the Prophecy 2007 Common Room and listen to music inspired by Harry Potter's canon and fanon. No stage, no fancy lights, and no AV equipment, just the musicians and the fans. Scheduled throughout the conference, bands and solo acts such as Oliver Boyd and the Rememberalls, the Cruciatus Curse, Celestial Warmbottom, and Andrew Sims perform. I'm in the description, Jamie. I'll
dude, you need
that.
A name. You need a name.
That is my name, Andrew Sims. I'm leaving it at that. I mean, you know, you thought the Harry and the Potters is big. Look who's in the description. Me. Seating is limited, so it's a first-come, first-served basis, and you must be a registrant of Prophecy 2007. So please email commonroom@prophecy2007.org for more details, or if you have any questions or comments, such as, I'm so glad you accepted Andrew because he is so cool, and he should... I don't know where I was going with that. At the very end of the show today will be the premiere of my next Wizard Rock song. Now, it's a spin-off of NSYNC's Bye Bye Bye.
A copy, then.
No. It's not a copy. But I had to hire some of their backup artists, backup singers. So, and they were a little... They weren't really accepting of changing their background vocals into my lyrics that I needed. So there's a couple Bye 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 backing vocals in there, so I mean, I made it work still because they were being a little hard about that. But anyway,
you downloaded a karaoke version, didn't you?
Yeah.
No, I hired the NSYNC backup vocals,
yes.
Like
okay,
Joey Fat One and Lance Bass and
That's awesome that you know their names.
I called him Fat One. It's really Fatone.
Oh. Yeah, but you still... Oh, so you know them enough to even make a joke about it.
Yeah. Wow. I lived in the 90s, didn't you?
Closet. No, I didn't. I was born in 86, then died for 10 years.
Yeah, he skipped
the 90s.
And
then came back to life.
All right, so... Anyway, of course, the big news this week, the deluxe cover for Book 7 came out today, Friday, and for the United States deluxe edition, it was big news. Arthur Levine announced it on the Today Show this morning on NBC. He seems to be all over NBC's Today Show these days.
He is, all this new stuff.
Yeah, they're really buddy-buddy, Matt Lauer and Arthur Levine.
Hey guys, but anyway, sometime we need to talk about Harry being a Horcrux, because I am really convinced that he is one now.
Ben, speaking of that, how has the tour been going?
The tour has been going wonderful. We've already been to, we've already had 10 events already, and three days ago we were in California, we were in San Francisco, so the travel has been taking a toll on us, but I mean, it's just really fun. I mean, I'm really enjoying the speaking, meeting all the fans. There's Pickle Pack members like crazy. Every event we go to, there's at least
really?
One or two. So
sweet.
That's awesome.
And every time they come up to me, they say, "Will you mention me in your Blickle this week?" And I always forget. So we only have we have a few more. We have about 2 weeks off on the tour. Check www.mugglenet.com/booktour.shtml. You can get the link on the website. There's a scrolling ticker. And you can see all the dates that we're going to be at here over the next 2 weeks. So come out and see us. It's a fun time.
Cool.
We talk about all kinds of crazy Harry Potter stuff.
Okay, so guys, so Micah, tell us about this cover here. What's going on with this cover? I'm questioning. This new cover art that's released. I like it. What do you guys think?
It's nice. It's very sort of Aragon-ish.
A little bit.
Sort of is, yeah.
I don't know if it's a bit... Sorry, go on.
Oh, no, I was worried. I said that first. I saw it in the small view, the thumb view, and I said, is that a Thestral or a dragon? Because if it's a dragon, it might as well be Aragon and not Harry.
Well,
but
we know it's a dragon because it's said right there in the press release. I actually want to read it. David Saylor, Vice President and Creative Director of Scholastic, described the art. He's quoted as saying, "Set during a highly dramatic sunset, Harry, Hermione, and Ron, clothes in tatters, cling atop a flying dragon in this astonishing artwork created by Mary Grand Prix for the deluxe edition. As mist creeps down towering hillsides to a village below, questions arrive about where the trio is headed and what has led them to this spellbinding moment."
That sounds like a bad piece of fan fiction, sorry.
Yeah.
But it's like the scarlet billowing clouds of the Hogwarts Express gleamed in the mouth-watering sunshine.
Yeah, it's
that was pretty good,
Jamie. You should write fan fiction.
Yeah, you should.
Oh no,
it's interesting how much detail they went in to that just that little description. But I mean, there are a couple of things we wanted to talk about. For one, we know for sure it's a dragon.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think it surpasses the original cover art for the U.S. Like, if I were in the U.S. at the time of the book, I would actually get the deluxe edition. Wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would. But, I mean, there's just something about getting the quote-unquote classic book that I like. You know, having the book without the extra box, just the book.
Okay.
You know, the deluxe is for
collectors. I've never owned any of the deluxe editions, to be honest. They're really expensive.
They used to be very cool when, you know, there was like only a handful made. But now the first edition stretches for like 100,000 copies. So it's, you know.
So everyone can get one. Really, it's
and I mean, Half-Blood Prince is the only other U.S. book that had a deluxe edition. So you can't even get a whole set. Half-Blood Prince.
Oh, because ours were all deluxe. They made deluxe editions, all of them.
But Scholastic just came up with the idea in 2005, I guess. I don't know.
There comes a point when you're just paying more for the same book.
Right.
Which was just a pretty cover, which is all nice and old, but, you know, how often are you just going to sit there and stare at it?
Well, I know that I remember when the Half-Blood Prince one came out, they were talking about additional artwork, and they had a copy of it out at Barnes & Noble on display, and I looked, and the additional artwork was all the chapter art just blown up bigger.
Oh, my God.
Right, that's
so
one thing that you
just,
get with it.
It was kind of a rip, it seemed to me.
A rip. Okay.
I mean, it's nice, though, for a collector who wants to see the art that Mary made in full detail, if you know what
I'm saying. Well, you can just
download it, but... And print it on your printer. We can hang it up.
Or you can just go to mugglenet.com chapter...
You could,
chapter art. Don't we have a chapter art page on
Mugglenet? Yeah, well, my chapter art's still on there, I think. That would be pretty, you
redid it, but we also include all the originals.
Oh, yeah.
Which, I don't know if Scholastic wants us to or not, but...
It's a bit late now. They've been up there about 5 years.
Yeah. So, what else do we want to talk about, guys?
Okay, so Micah did some... Micah, was it you who did this research here? Or did you get an email that said, hey, guys, what about this?
No, I did some research. I was reading through the comments, probably like most of us were, and seeing what all the fans out there had to say. And, you know, they had a bunch of different ideas as far as where the dragon was flying over and what was going on. And one of the most interesting things I thought, though, is what type of dragon is this? And a lot of people thought, well, maybe it's Norbert. Maybe we're going back to book one and he's all grown up and now they're using him for some type of adventure. But based on the eyes that the dragon has, a lot of people said that it's a dragon that's found in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. And I'm going to butcher this name because I don't know how to say it correctly. The Antipodean Opal Eye. And do you guys want me to read the description?
It's an attempt.
Antipodean, I think.
Antipodean?
Just to be, yeah, stupid.
Antipodean Opal Eye?
Okay. So do you want me to read the description real fast here?
Sure. What does it say in the book?
It says, the opal eye is native of New Zealand, though it has been known to migrate to Australia when territory becomes scarce in its native land. Unusually for a dragon, it dwells in valleys rather than mountains. It is a medium size, between 2 and 3 tons. Perhaps the most beautiful type of dragon, it has iridescent pearly scales and glittering multicolored pupilless eyes. Hence its name. This dragon produces a very vivid scarlet frame, though by dragon standards it is not particularly aggressive and will rarely kill unless hungry. Its favorite food is sheep, not cow, though it has been known to attack larger prey. A spate, is that how you say that, of kangaroo killings in the late 1970s were attributed to a male opal eye ousted from his homeland by a dominant female. Opal eye eggs are pale gray and may be mistaken for fossils by unwary muggles. So I think a lot of people determined that this was an opal eye based on the fact that the dragon in this picture doesn't have any pupils.
And that is the point where I confirm that, yes, in fact, this dragon on the cover is indeed an Antipodean opal eye, or Antipodean opal eye, and that Mary Grand Prix actually called me up and wanted to borrow mine so that she could draw it for the
Your Antipodean dragon eye. I mean, yeah, opal eye. What, you keep one in your basement
dragon,
or something?
Opie,
Eric.
Yeah, I call him Opie. And he's a really cool dragon. He's really beautiful.
You told me
and,
he was called Steve.
He's called Steve. Steve, my Antipodean opal eye dragon. So I was up. No, actually, seriously, guys. There's an area about an hour or two north of here, north of Wellington, called the Wairarapa, and there's these tall mountains and a very thin valley. You guys might know it from Lord of the Rings. It was the Dimholt. All right. So you guys may. Yeah, yeah. So you guys might recognize it from Lord of the Rings, the Dimholt, which is the Dark Wood. So right around that area, which is the valleys in this place, the Wairarapa. And so I was just driving up there together when I first came to New Zealand, and I met Stevie. So he became my dragon, and I was kind of, you know, I visited him on weekends and stuff. But totally.
Okay, but in reality here, what significance does what type of dragon it is hold?
Well, Micah, do you want to continue about the Antipodes?
I think the opal eye thing is kind of obvious in its name, right? Mm-hmm. Opal eye, that kind of makes sense. But the other thing I did was I did a little research. What does Antipodean mean? And actually, what it says is that the antipodes of any place on the earth is the place which is diametrically opposite it, so situated that a line drawn from the one to the other passes through the center of the earth and forms a true diameter. Now, to me, if you take that and you put it into sort of a visual, you take the earth and you put a diameter through it, that somewhat represents the symbol that we saw on the spine of...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That symbol we've been talking about forever and ever and ever. For the past 5 weeks.
And I just think that's too coincidental.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Especially when you look at...
That's interesting.
Mikey, you pointed out to me earlier this week a screen cap from Goblet of Fire, which has something in the movie. Maybe you can tell everyone which point in the movie it was again. But it's in the movie, and it's an actual sphere.
Yeah.
And there's something going through it, right?
Yeah.
Just like you were talking about.
Yeah, somebody sent in a rebuttal saying if you go to the pensive scene of Goblet of Fire, right after Harry comes out of the pensive, he's talking with Dumbledore. Dumbledore goes over to one of his cabinets, and in the cabinet, you can see what appears to be the exact same symbol as we see on the spine of Goblet of Fire. It's sort of this object, instrument, whatever you want to call it.
Which would be a real life version of whatever this is.
Right. Right.
I bet it's kind of like, to draw an X-Men reference, Cerebro, you know, from X-Men. That thing, I bet he can, like, see where people are on Earth. Not a kind of Marauder's Map thing, which is, you know, just in Hogwarts, but I bet it's something like that.
So you really think so?
Or it's like a Horcrux detector.
How would, maybe a Horcrux detector, but what would it do? Whiz really fast?
He bought it at Target. Yeah.
So wait. Well, if it's at all like Cerebro, how would you actually plug in? How would Dumbledore, kind of locate things, or how would one use that instrument if it's just a triangular object with a sphere and a line through it? Seeing what are its applications as an object? What do you think it would actually do?
This thing. Well, it could do anything. I mean, it's the fact that it has two halves perhaps could be like a good evil reference or a good side, bad side, or a Voldemort, Dumbledore, or a Gryffindor, Slytherin.
That's why a few weeks ago someone brought up that split could be Snape, good versus evil.
Mm. Well, I just like this idea of the Antipodean Opali, because it made me feel really special. Because all of a sudden there's this New Zealand reference, and I'm thinking, oh, that's where I am, and you know where I've been hanging out. And so in Harry Potter, there's this dragon that might be the dragon they're riding, which is originally from New Zealand, and it's my Stevie. So I'm really happy. But Micah, you did
paying you royalties.
Yeah. Oh well, can't really talk about that. But
so yes.
Yeah, but you guys, Micah, there's also a thing on Antipodes, or Antipodes, about noon at one place being midnight at the other, on the opposite side of the world. And so the longest day at one point corresponds to the shortest day at the other, and midwinter at one point is contemporaneous with midsummer at the others. So it could play into the sky. Do you get that?
Play into the sky could also play into, we know midwinter, well, December 31st is when Voldemort was born. And we also know that Harry was born midsummer. So,
oh, that's very good, yeah.
July 31st.
And also...
it's actually 5 months apart.
And on the cover of the American edition, they're like holding their hands up to the sky. Perhaps that's the kind... I mean, this is terrible, but perhaps it's a kind of, you know, half and half thing, night and day, as you were saying, sunset.
Could be.
Actually, that's awful. No, don't say that, Micah. It's clearly not.
Well, what if there's something to do with... We know that they can't face each other with their wands, at least. And what if there's some time of year? Like, you know, we're talking about, the difference between night and day and the difference between certain days on other sides of the world. What if there's a certain time?
It is. Laura,
a specific
Laura, it's
time
like
when
on,
they can.
It's like on June 20th. And they get their June 19th stay over.
Why all of a sudden would
dinner,
they be allowed to
get drunk
on
together
a certain
as
day?
One final
that.
Night, you know, and then kill each other? The next
well, no,
day.
I mean, there seems to be a significance being put on the Earth and specific times of day. That, I mean, at least that's what I'm getting from this. Like, there seems to be a special significance being put on it, and I'm trying to figure out what's so special about it.
Yeah, and if you look at the explanation. It says dramatic sunset of the, you know, it's sunset, and you look at the cover and it's kind of like daylight and all sorts of stuff. Like, not only will Book 7, I guess, answer all the questions or a lot of the questions that we've been asking, but it seems to be focusing on the sky and all these other, you know, what would be seemingly random or seemingly extraneous kind of ideas, like the sky and antipodes, like, you know, opposite ends of the earth. What exactly, you know, that it's pretty cool stuff.
Mm-hmm. Is that the sun setting on the right side of the picture?
Yeah.
I didn't even really notice that until now. I mean, the sky is almost the same color as the regular U.S. edition. So, I mean, we were in one of the previous shows, we were just talking about, well, what time of day was it? So I guess if the color of the sky sort of matches, I guess we can assume from both that they're both set in the evening.
Except
we were
I
thinking,
was...
oh, maybe they were fighting all night and then it was like a new day
like a
and
new
sun
day.
Was rising. So, you know.
Well, I was happy that Harry or that Hermione and Ron are with Harry in this new image. I was very happy with that. Just because.
Right. In the timeline of events is this image placed? Because we have...
I agree with Ben.
The very end?
I think this is,
because
this is the end.
Is this before or after Harry's battle with Voldemort?
I don't know. I don't think it would be after.
Yeah, I sort of think it's before, too.
I think they look too scared, especially Hermione, for it to be after.
Yeah, their clothes are in tatters.
Oh, it's weird, because, like, Hermione's looking up at something in the sky. Harry's looking straight ahead. Mm-hmm. And Ron's also looking straight ahead, it seems. But it almost looks like this is sometime around when they're coming out of, perhaps, Gringotts. Because they're wearing cloaks. Now, they don't match the same colors as the...
As the UK cover,
right,
yeah.
Right, so... And...
Well, you know, I almost wondered, when you look at the village below, are they anywhere near Godric's Hollow?
Yeah, is that Godric's Hollow?
Right, right.
Could it be? Is a hollow... But I thought a hollow was like a clearing in trees or something, so I wasn't...
No. It's just a...
It doesn't necessarily have to be...
It's name more than...
It's just the name of their village or neighborhood.
Okay, yeah, but that's like, you know, that's like... Never mind.
Well, I mean, if you go back to the whole antipode thing, part of what it said there is that it's used in Britain to refer to Australia and New Zealand, as the inhabitants of these countries are sometimes referred to as Antipodeans. So, I mean, you could be in a completely different country in that shot right there. Because if that is indeed right. The dragon, that dragon only resides in Australia and New Zealand. So,
oh, really?
Right.
Right, but why would they be going
Eric,
to Australia?
Eric, have you gotten a visit from Harry?
Eric has
the last Horcrux at his house.
You know what? I see Alice's house in this cover.
Yeah, that's us. No, actually, those houses do resemble some of the houses in Wellington that are built up on hills and stuff. So, I'm just saying, I'm feeling the love. I don't know exactly what this means, but all of a sudden, New Zealand's in the focus as being the Antipodeans of the UK, and suddenly I feel like I'm right there.
Yeah, and
Jamie. I feel like I'm right there. I feel like it's special.
This is quite the thing about. This photo is the clouds. I mean, I assume it isn't drawn to scale, but the clouds are very, very low, and so compared to like the village.
Wait, are you talking about these?
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Fog, the white. That's fog.
Oh, is that fog?
It's described in the press release as fog.
Okay.
There's like a little waterfall over to the right. I didn't really notice that either.
Oh yeah, I mean, apart from that fog stuff that looks like cloud, it just looks like. The village doesn't look particularly important, and although didn't she describe Godric's Hollow as a very normal sort of sleepy village, you know, that wasn't particularly exciting, it was just where they lived.
Well, actually, guys, there's, if you think about it, there's actually, they're not above, at first when I saw it, I thought they were above water, but they're actually flying above farmland, but there's a river, the orangeness is kind of a river, so they're actually in between mountains, so they're flying through a valley, which would seem to fit as well with the Opal Eyes, you know, origins as per Fantastic Beasts. So,
well, Jamie, are there landscapes like this in the UK at all? I mean, are there mountains this?
No, not with villages beneath them.
Okay, but you guys can remember, it is a fantasy world, so if J.K. Rowling wants mountains to be beneath a mountain.
Well, no, but J.K.R. has always been accurate with things like, remember in the first book when they
like
took the trip? Yeah, when
stuff.
They took the trip down through England to...
Yeah, and the,
right, and Godric's Hollow and Hogwarts do actually exist.
Well,
and
no,
Hogwarts.
But I'm saying...
Come on,
I'm saying,
about
no,
landscapes.
I'm saying as far as being geographically correct, yes, she has creative license, but she actually puts... the borough in a small area outside a village. She actually plans this kind of stuff. When the Railview Hotel is in Cokeworth, you can actually track the, you know, from Surrey to, you know, in that direction. The landscape is the same. She's not going to put mountains in the middle of England if there aren't any.
No, but that's just continuity, Eric. That isn't geography. It's continuity that she can't just say first they were driving down a road and then they were driving down, you know, a dirt track littered with volcanoes. It's just
it's continuity, but she's also made references to London. They've
oh, she has,
London,
yeah, and, the,
and the Prime Minister. They didn't make that up. That's not, you know,
no,
fantasy.
but she can say that the Prime Minister lives in, you know, Zimbabwe.
Yeah, but it's clear continuity. That the Harry Potter books are set in the United Kingdom, outside of London. They go through King's Cross. King's Cross is real. I mean, there's tons of real. Life examples.
Right, but there's tons of real references about the same time. If there is no Ottery St. Catchpole, is there? I doubt it.
Well, I'm just saying she wouldn't put mountains where there aren't any mountains. She wouldn't put, you know, she
unless this is in the magical world. I think that's what we should be considering here. Because if this scene is not in the magical world, then yeah, it's probably in New Zealand.
Wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they be in the magical world?
Well, that's the question. There is no actual magical world, is there? I mean, the magical world is the Muggle world.
There's no locations that are unplottable.
Unless there's entire, you know, exactly. No, because there's mountains.
Unplottable locations still exist in the Muggle world.
They still exist, but they don't want to go there because, like they said, they resemble a broken down house. Or
well, yeah, exactly. But if you, she said that Hogwarts is, you know, if Muggles go there, it's a sign saying danger, don't enter, or something like that. But if they did enter and they walked past Harry, would they see each other? It's like I saw a film the other day, Silent Hill. And
yeah.
Has anyone seen that?
Silent Hill's a great movie, Jamie.
And in it, there are basically two different worlds. One in which this woman has to find a child, and one in which the woman's husband and a police officer are finding the woman. And you sort of see one scene where the woman is finding her child, and like there are all these monsters there, and the place is red with blood and stuff like that. And then the camera moves, and it's the police officer and the man in exactly the same place, but it's a completely different world.
Yeah,
and they can sense each other, but they can't see each other. So
exactly.
if we went into the building that Hogwarts is supposed to be and walked in and sort of looked around, could you bump into Harry and stuff like that or not?
Well, the difference is that you wouldn't be able to travel up the corridors or anything because the corridors wouldn't be there. You actually wouldn't see Hogwarts. You would be, and by that time you would remember that you left the oven on or the kettle on or something.
No, go ahead, Eric.
Okay, well, just to correct about Silent Hill, there's actually, I mean, it was a great movie. I liked it, and a friend of mine got me then into the video games. There's actually like four or five different dimensions in Silent Hill, but the town, it's that idea of, you know, alternate kind of realities and what is real, what is not. Are they alive? Are they dead? And that's kind of Harry Potter related.
Yeah, but also we also got to remember that if this really is this dragon, the Antipodean Opal Eye, whatever you want to call it, if it really is that type of dragon, Joe has specifically said that it's native to New Zealand and Australia. So,
but does it only reside there? Is that what it says?
It says the Opal Eye is native of New Zealand, though it has been known to migrate to Australia.
Right, but so that doesn't mean that you can't fly on it outside of there.
Yeah, but I mean, Charlie also works with dragons in Romania.
And they transport dragons
around
all the time, I'm sure.
Well, fair enough.
Because what if you're talking about...
Okay, I have a question. I don't know if you guys already talked about this. Don't get mad at me if you did. But didn't Hagrid say dragons can't... I mean, didn't J.K. Rowling said no matter what Hagrid thinks, dragons can't be tamed? So how exactly...
Yeah, she said they can't be tamed.
So how exactly are they riding still... one? So unless it's like... the first thought that came to my mind is this Norbert again.
Well, okay, it's the power of love. It's the power of love.
Well,
okay?
Harry, there are always exceptions, yeah.
For example, look into... they always put J.K. Rowling puts things into the movie. She makes sure certain things are into the movie. And the plot line in Sorcerer's Stone for Norbert was significantly cut down, but at the same time it was left in there. And you have to wonder why they wouldn't remove it at all unless that was significant later on. And to me, that's why it would make sense that dragon could be Norbert. Although, do you actually think Mary Grand Prix went through Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them to find the exact dragon and draw it based off that description? Or do you think she was just drawing a dragon?
Well, I think she read the book, actually. But that
she
was
did
my,
read the book.
Oh, I know, but if the book said this...
If it said it was this type of dragon, they...
But do you think they'd actually know? I mean, I guess it depends on how the story goes.
I would think if you're illustrating one of the most popular books in the world, you would do your research.
No, that's not what
that's
I'm saying. I'm saying
that's
what
that's
has
and I'm sure that
mind,
there's a description
know,
in
when,
the
would,
book.
Would they be talking about, oh, yeah, I can't wait to go ride the Opal Eye Dragon or whatever? I mean, would they actually say that?
Well, it
that?
Could be significant.
There'll be a description,
right.
though, Ben. She's not
of
just
going
to say they hopped on a dragon.
Of course, say the dragon was this color or blah, blah, blah. But I don't know.
Even if it is, even overall. Even if it is from Australia and New Zealand, it doesn't mean that it couldn't go to Great Britain. I mean, what purpose would they have in Australia and New Zealand?
It would take a long time. Yeah,
well, no, Ben's question is my question, too. It'd be kind of weird for JKR to set a Harry Potter book outside of England at any time, or Europe, I should say. I mean, we've seen, you know, we've heard a bit of France, we've heard a bit of Bulgaria, we've even heard of, you know, the American plumbers, etc. You know, there's kind of a, but the books are set in England. This is
well, I think
English
it goes
book.
Back to what Laura was talking about earlier, and sort of the whole only certain things can happen on certain days, and maybe there's a connection with that symbol. Maybe that symbol, its effect is sort of transporting them somewhere else. Does that make sense? I mean, this symbol is tied in somehow.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
It's too coincidental.
There is, yeah. I mean, the more that we see, you know, of cover art coming out, and you know, the emphasis on times of day and the sky is really, really intriguing, because you've got to consider that it's got to play a huge role. I mean, they wouldn't be putting such an emphasis on it if it wasn't.
What do you think about the UK edition?
What do you mean, though? What do you mean? Hold on a sec. Explain what you mean.
Well, there. I mean, you just see such a huge emphasis on the sky, like in the U.S. cover, for instance. Harry and Voldemort are both reaching up towards the sky. They're both looking up towards the sky. In the U.K. version, you can see the same color from the sky through the archway on the cover. And here, again, you see the same kind of colored sky, and they're all looking off into the distance.
But that doesn't tell you that it's
now, with,
enormously significant.
Yes, but then it does, though, because even with his description, he described it as, you know, he was talking about a sunset, and it just seems like that they are putting more of an emphasis on the sky than they ever did before. You never
Perhaps
really
it's,
heard about that.
Not prophetic fallacy.
Yeah. Well, not to mention, you always hear about in the books, you know, the blood red sky. There's always some sort of description of it, and it just seems like...
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a description of the sky, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it relates to the plot. I mean,
I think
the sun
it could,
be setting,
though, because
that,
with this symbol,
it
tied
could,
together
yeah,
with this symbol and what it could
so
be.
Weird. If, yeah.
There was an email today, I guess, but that brought up an interesting quote from book one saying, well, look at the sky and look at what one of the centaurs said back in book one about Mars being bright tonight. And could that sort of redness be what's lighting up the sky?
Red and Mars and pink and purple and azure and... Well, Azure's blue, but
well, you get
I
the
think.
Point. I mean,
no. And it seems like if anything was ever related to the sky, it would be book seven. But I just don't know what kind of reference it would be. I mean, we need to. Here we are presented with souls and things like that are very, you know, earthbound or spiritual. And now, you know, we're talking about the sky and how that relates to Harry Potter. And it's an open ended question, because I don't think we know enough. I mean, it could be anything.
Right. Yeah, and okay, quick question though, guys. This is related to book seven, not necessarily the sky or anything on the cover, but something that really wasn't cleared up that I haven't really heard much discussion about was in Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, towards the end in the Department of Mysteries, when all of the prophecies get smashed, we hear one prophecy. There's like an old man saying, at the solstice will come anew, and there's a lady who says, and none will come after. And it's in an italicized font. Now, do you guys have any thoughts on what that is? I mean, I know
we talked about this.
We did talk about it a while back.
We talked about how it could be the book, you know, because it was talking about book seven and
right.
You know, and the summer solstice. Actually, Micah didn't.
The summer solstice is on June 21st, though.
Sorry,
not July.
Oh no! I know, but
the summer solstice.
Micah,
is June
you had
21st.
A theory, yeah?
Or the Phoenix
about
on,
it being somewhere near October or December, something about that. Just to completely put you on the spot here.
I don't know. I think, didn't she release the date on the winter solstice, or she
yes,
released
Yes, she did.
Something?
That's it. Yeah, November 21st, wasn't it?
No, December.
Right, but don't you think it's actually going to play a role in the series rather than? It's actually going to play a role in the series rather than it being like a thing that happened in real life, like the book was announced on that day.
Well, it doesn't have to. But, I mean, Laura, when you were talking about specific dates and specific times of day, I just thought Halloween, you know, All Hallows Eve, the one day of the year, all the souls can come back. It's just kind of that similar idea.
I don't know. I just always found it somewhat interesting. I mean, and I think that there is an emphasis put on specific times of the year and what might be going on during those days, because, for instance, in the prophecy, it talks about Harry being born as the seventh month dies. Well, if you think about Voldemort, he's born as the year dies, December 31st. So,
kind of death and birth in life.
Yeah. Yeah.
That does tend to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not necessarily in that order.
Do you guys think the sun appears to be setting? I know Andrew brought this up before, but in the U.S. edition, it appears to be fully in the sky. So can we...
It does?
You don't think so? I mean, it appears to be completely lit. I mean, there's light, a lot of it, whereas here,
it
almost looks like this scene is taking place after what happened previously.
Right, because the top of this guy is like a purplish blue,
right.
Whereas that covers
Could they be returning to that sort of portal area that's on the UK edition? Do you think they're going back to that?
You know what this reminds me of? I don't know how many of you have seen the third Pirates of the Caribbean yet.
Oh, God, Laura. You raved about it. You raved about it. It's just a bad topic amongst
movie casters. It's very, very cool. It's very, very cool. They have this thing where they're coming back from the world of the dead.
Which they ripped off of every single movie and...
it. Fine. But if you've seen... Well, I don't want to spoil it for Jamie, but if you've seen the movie, you understand about sunrise and sunset. It's very cool. But anyway...
So even if it is a dragon, it's a dragon. So no matter what kind of dragon it is, what is the purpose of them flying on the dragon to begin with?
Getting away to wherever they're going.
Obviously, it's moving. That's like saying, why are they in bed to sleep? We did get an email from Sarah 19 in Chicago. She says, read in the comments.
Sarah, that's such a beautiful name.
Yeah. So read in the comments. I found a few things that people overlooked about the cover art for the Deluxe edition. First of all, the town below may be Hogsmeade or Godric's Hollow, but it could also be Little Hangleton or some other place of importance to Voldemort. But here's the more interesting part that I wanted to read in the first place. Secondly, why the dragon? The trio is of age. Why not apparate? My first guess would be that Hogwarts must be involved since you are not able to apparate to or from the castle. If this is so, then the village below could very well be Hogsmeade. Gringotts could also make sense since we know it is high security location, much like Hogwarts.
Well, you know what that makes me think of? Doesn't the Ministry have some sort of regulation on apparition?
They also have regulations on dragons, but it's
yeah, but if you steal a dragon, they can't track it.
Nobody said that they're still it or
they
anything.
Can, Laura.
Well, I think that you guys should think about the other uses of a dragon. Because I mean, Harry could use Buckbeak. He could have used they could have all be flying on a hippogriff, which would be a boring cover because we've already seen it. But you know, there are so many ways Harry can travel: apparition, broomsticks, hippogriff,
flu powder, And once again, remember, J.K. Rowling doesn't put things into the series for no reason, and we continually hear about the 12 uses of dragon's blood, yet we don't know what the 12 uses are.
Yeah, but guys, no, what I'm saying is must be other benefits to have them on a dragon in the cover, okay? There must be other reasons that they're flying on a dragon. Maybe they need it for protection or defense on wherever they're going, wherever they're heading from.
Whatever it is, it's an important reason because Arthur Levine specifically asked Mary Grant Prix to put it on the cover. Just a little tidbit there. I mean, maybe he just thought it was a cool scene, granted, but...
I don't think it's an arms race.
That's funny.
I'm not a shoulder
Speaking
to cry
of
on.
Which,
but I
all the Fallout Doing Boy fans right are like
dying right now.
Very, very unhappy with
Why?
Me. Or the comment I made
what?
Last week where I
What'd you say?
Where I said that their little band was stupid, but
it kind of seems like there's a lot of emphasis being placed on Hermione's cloak because it's the only one that's sticking up. And Harry's is being blown back. Yeah, Harry's is being blown back. Ron's is being blown back. But Hermione's is just
she's also lying down.
Is she?
Yeah, look at her.
Yes, yeah. I have my brightness turned down. My eyes are killing me. But
tattered.
But still, the cloak wouldn't be blowing up. I guess it is tattered. It just seems like there's extra emphasis. Whatever. They're all just got out of something, and the dragon saved the day. Micah, any final thoughts?
No, I mean, I think we did a pretty good job. I'm sure we'll get plenty of emails.
Plenty of emails. More information will come. Maybe somebody, a certain someone, Micah might acknowledge that we got it right away. The Opalai thing. You reckon?
Yeah, J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, maybe.
Email us, please.
All right, Jamie, you want to bring back a segment?
This is one that I'm quite fond of. It's make the connection where I give you Harry Potter and then something, and you have to lightning fast make a connection.
Oh, I'd love to do that.
Between it.
Start with Ben, because I don't think Ben's done this.
You haven't done this yet, Ben. Well, no, I'll start off with Laura, because she's done it before, so she knows. You know,
okay,
what's between.
Yeah,
no, I've done it before.
You have, Ben. Yeah,
you told me Harry Potter. And
oh yeah,
Braveheart.
Of course, that was it. Yeah, and you hadn't seen Braveheart, so you did a pretty good job. Okay, Ben, yours is now. You have to listen very carefully because this is a very specific one. Harry Potter and the banker from Deal or No Deal. Go.
Oh my gosh. They're both a little bit full of themselves. You know, Harry's, when you see in book five, Harry is really upset that Ron gets made prefect and he's not. And the guy in Deal or No Deal is, you know, he's kind of an arrogant jerk. So they share a similar,
they both have Voldemort,
they share similar qualities there. They both give away lots of money because Harry gives away money to Fred and George. And yeah, that's all I can think of.
That's pretty good. I like that. I like that. Okay. Laura, yours is the annoyance caused when your light bulb burns out just when you have to do something important. Come on, it's an easy one. I'm going easy on you.
Oh, come on. Harry needs light to do his homework when he's the privet
guy. Yeah, come on.
No, he has his wand light.
That's not really a connection.
He has his wand light for them.
Yeah, he has his wand light.
Yeah, but he can't do magic inside of school.
So it's
okay then.
You really have to go to the bathroom while you're reading Harry Potter, but you can't because it's so intriguing that you just can't get up and go, so it's annoying.
That's acceptable. I liked it.
Have any of you guys ever read Harry Potter in the pot?
No, sorry, I missed that.
No, I mean, like the crapper, the John.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Not the
I keep,
pot.
I keep all six books in the toilet, so I can just go in and pick one up.
You have a shelf right next to you.
No, I do. I do. It's the perfect toilet reading.
Wait, Jamie, I've seen you. We've seen your bathroom. We've seen your loo. I haven't.
You have. Well, no, I've left that house now because I left Durham. But
your home house. Yeah, okay.
I have it there now as well. Yeah. Okay, Micah, you ready for yours?
Sure.
Harry Potter and Freddy Krueger. Do you know who he is?
I do know who he is. Well, Harry seems to have a lot of nightmares throughout the entire series, and Freddy Krueger is well known for showing up in people's dreams after they fall asleep and trying to kill them. They're both big movie stars. Sorry, I can't do anything.
No, that was really, really good.
They're both serial killers too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they both. Okay, Andrew. Andrew, yours. Yes.
Sorry. It's Andrew's.
Andrew, yours. Huh? Okay. Andrew, yours is eBay.
eBay. Well, you never know. Harry never knows what he's going to run into next in all of his adventures, and you never know what you're really going to find on eBay. And let's see what else. What's eBay's slogan? Something simple. I can't remember.
Buy it, sell it, love it, isn't it? Or something,
yeah,
like,
something
that.
Like that. But eBay. That's my only connection.
A little disappointing, but I'm sure you tried your best.
For 20 hours, I'm tired.
Okay, yeah. That was a good name.
Jamie.
Made that connection. And if anyone has any ideas, I'm sorry, Eric. I'm sorry. I thought, aren't you going?
Oh no,
you're going. I'm sorry.
Do you want to?
Okay, cool. Okay, fine. Your name that connection is, sorry, make that connection is Harry Potter and constitutional law and judicial policy making.
Okay, well, constitutional law and policy making has worked against Harry throughout his schooling, and he's had many run-ins with the law. And it's just they seem to make laws that do not fit anybody in Harry's situation who is actually, you know, in need of getting stuff done and in need of, he's breaking the law, but that just shows that the law is actually not as realistic for any kind of safety or upheaval of it. Harry is, I mean, look at Dolores Umbridge. She went through all the right channels, she even broke the law to send the Dementors after Harry, but Harry was faced with the full penalties of the law as a result of just protecting himself. So yeah, the law and Harry don't really get along. And yeah,
very good, very good. Okay, that was a very good mate-like connection. I'm very impressed.
Good job, Jamie.
Thank you, Ben. You too.
Good work.
We'll be back next week with that, hopefully.
Jamie, you should determine a winner. Whoever makes the best connection wins. You should determine.
I thought that Eric, you put over a very good argument, but I thought that you sort of brought constitutional law and judicial policy making into Harry Potter instead of treating them as two separate fields.
That's very good analysis. I will try and refine myself for a future segment.
Thank you, Laura. Which one did you do again?
I did the annoyance of when a light bulb goes out and you have something.
I thought yours is also very, very, very good. But again, I didn't think you treated them as two separate, sort of instances, and you kind of implied a causal connection between them when I don't think you can.
Well, okay. Jamie, to be fair on Andrew, I think that eBay has a little bit, less to do with it. It's a lot easier to treat things as two separate entities when they actually don't have anything to do with each other. I mean, Freddy Krueger is slightly different than the feeling that your arm gets when it falls asleep, but the white stuff that collects on your mouth when you're cotton mouth.
Ben, which one did you get?
Me, I did the Deal or No Deal guy.
Okay. Micah, yours was very Freddy good Kruger. As well. But yeah, I thought that Freddy Krueger was excellent because you sort of compared both people. Although I thought the nightmare reference was good, it was sort of dragging it away from the actual two personas, so you mix it up a bit. Ben, you are the winner because I thought it was a very good reference in that you used both of them separately and compared them on their personal character traits. And although it was a little crude, I think you referred to them both as jackasses. I think that it was a good argument overall. I thought you put forward the case very respectively and... argued it well.
Thank you very much.
Just to get this clear, Jamie, if you wanted us to compare two elements as separate. So for Freddy Krueger, could we say that, in the Nightmare on Elm Street series, Freddy Krueger was actually a janitor at the local school who was a pedophile, and they the parents ganged together and burned him in the incinerator, and so he swore revenge on all their children, he'd haunt their nightmares. That's the story of behind Freddy. So if I were to say that Harry and Freddy both, parents disapprove of both of them, would that be like
Yes, that's more so because if you say
reason.
That Harry has nightmares, you're dragging an aspect of Freddy's world into him and then comparing those two. It's like a fallacy. Whereas if you said that sort of because to make that connection, you'd have to say that Krueger has nightmares and so does Harry. If you see what I mean, because you're actually physically comparing them. Whereas
it's a post hoc fallacy.
See, I was going to say straw man, but that's
okay. So I just think it commends. Some of this stuff is. I think that it should be a little bit more consistent with how difficult it is. Like to do what you wanted with the Freddy Krueger reference, Micah would have actually had to know the story of Nightmare on Elm Street and face it.
But that's part of it, though. That's part of it.
It was a close second.
Connection maker
second.
Should be able to think on the spot. So if you said make a connection between Braveheart and Harry Potter, you can automatically think, Braveheart is obviously a story about a brave heart, a brave man. Harry Potter is also clearly a brave heart because he battles all these people. So that's your first reference.
Okay, guys, I think we spent too much time on this.
Yeah, I think we've got it.
Well, 2 weeks ago, we started a little segment called The Road to Deathly Hallows, where we'll be taking Scholastic's questions. We'll be taking one of their questions each and every week and discussing them on the show because we are getting closer to the release of the seventh book. This week, the question is, who will live and who will die? We're going to sort of run through a list here and see what everyone has to say, and if we disagree, we'll discuss it. So, the first one up, the obvious candidate is Harry.
Live.
Absolutely.
Live.
you know, I've said a lot in the past that I think he will die.
You can't
change
your mind. Don't even think
the
about
more
changing
I, mind. The more I look at the cover art, you know, the more, you know, clearly Harry and Voldemort are going to be in the final battle at the end of the book. And I know this is backtracking on everything I've ever said, and I still stand by the fact that if Harry died, it would be the best ending ever. However,
apart from it being the worst ending,
I don't think Joe will kill Harry, because if it's Harry versus Voldemort in the final battle, it wouldn't make sense for Voldemort to actually win after the past 7 years.
Well, the Voldemort wouldn't have to win, though, would he? Couldn't Harry, like...
He could kill himself, yeah.
Well, the thing is, okay, I was thinking this the other day. What's the definition of a hero?
You know what? We actually have
like a hero.
That's a good question. We've discussed that in our English class. I can't even speak English a few times.
Oh, well.
And it's like everyone has different opinions on it. So
it's true. And because you have heroes, legends, myths, you know, saints, martyrs. What's the difference between a martyr and a hero? I always thought that a hero, you can't. To be a hero, you obviously have to commit a selfless act, a completely selfless act. But I heard someone say that,
well,
the only heroes are dead heroes.
No, I disagree.
You can't be
with
a hero
that.
And still
okay,
be alive.
Guys, yeah, no, actually, I'm reminded of The Sandlot.
Yeah,
have you
seen
The Sandlot?
Thinking of that, actually.
When Babe Ruth comes back and says, heroes get remembered, but legends never die, Benny. And then he runs and jumps over the fence and saves him from the dog and gets the ball back from the dog.
It just Sorry. Depends on your definition. And we've been, you know, said the entire time that he's a hero. So can he be alive and be a hero? I don't know.
Well, I mean,
absolutely,
you also have to
yeah.
consider that one person's hero is another person's villain. So.
Just like one man's terrorist is another person's freedom fighter.
One man's yeah. freedom fighter.
One man's...
Or one man's trash is another person's treasure, blah, blah, blah.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean,
Hermione.
That's true.
Liv.
Oh, Liv, definitely, yeah.
Liv, yeah.
She
Liv.
Can't die just because she can't.
She actually can't die, Hermione.
Very logical argument.
Ron, he's a weak one in the tree.
He has to die. He's got to die because of the whole...
No, I think
he's going to make it through.
The world
but I think,
doesn't work like this.
Can you get off the trio?
I think he's the most vulnerable of the trio.
Exactly.
I think he's the most vulnerable, but I think he'll make it through.
But you can't just be like that.
Actually,
he's the most vulnerable.
I'm half and half.
I don't know.
Voldemort.
Yeah, he's
die.
But I was like, is he going to die, or is he actually going to discover that something is worse
no,
than death?
No, never. He can't do that. What was I going to say about this? It's like, I saw a TV series a while ago where basically this one character throughout the entire thing acted in some way, and then throughout the entire series, the whole story was him trying to turn, you know, people thinking, oh, is he going to turn good and do something worthwhile? And then in the end he does, but then the final thing is him going back to how he was. And I thought it was a dreadful ending, because, you know, when the thing that people have been waiting for happens, you can't try and be clever and think, well, it was just a phase, and, you know, people are who they are, and people live the same lives, and people don't change.
No, I wasn't saying that he's going to repent. I was saying that could it be that he discovers something is worse than death, like they take his magic away, or Dementor sucks out his
that's
soul.
That's too just, and it isn't like, you know, wars aren't a case of being just. It isn't like, you know, do unto him as.
But wouldn't you agree that Harry Potter is going to be I think it's going to be a happily ever after story.
No, it's not. Yes, it is. It is, but it isn't going to abandon reality.
Are you sure, Jamie? Are you sure?
No. I mean. No, Ben, it is going to be a happily ever after novel, because it kind of has to be, but it can't be like they can't. I've lost my train of thought. One sec. It has to be a happily ever after novel, but it can't be one in which, you know, justice and rightfulness happen. Yes, it's going to, the overall thing is going to be justice and rightfulness, but people can't get their comeuppance, and they can't show that crime doesn't pay, because even though she's writing for children, she's writing, you know, she's writing that there's a war, and wars don't follow the same rules. So, you know, taking the thing that Voldemort loves most, his power and his immortality, and returning him to a human with no magical powers would be just, because he's abused his magical powers. So it makes sense for him not to have any. It would be stupid. It would be like a plot thing that doesn't make sense, because he has to die, because that's just, to me, what has to happen.
Well, not to mention, what he fears the most is what he deserves. which is death.
Yeah, exactly.
Because in his perception, there is nothing worse than death. So why not give him?
But
what
Laura,
he
does
fears
anyone
most?
Deserve death? Does anyone?
Well, yeah, but maybe the fact that Dumbledore. Maybe the fact that Dumbledore keeps telling reminding him that there is something worse than death means that.
Mm. Well, I think if Voldemort were turned into a Muggle, and this is just my comment, if Voldemort were turned into a Muggle, he would die from just not having a nose.
Yes, he couldn't breathe.
Now, Hagrid. Hagrid, I think, is too lovable, too innocent to die.
That'd be more reason
for Joe to kill. For Joe to kill.
He's too naive. He's so tough as well. He's so tough. He's kind of like me.
Yeah.
Hagrid is
yeah,
like Jamie.
Hagrid's going to
When
love,
I read Rubius Hagrid, I think Jamie Lawrence.
Me too. I mean,
Jamie, maybe if you like...
He's stacked. I'm stacked.
Maybe if you really like Chick-fil-A.
Ginny.
Oh, who cares? Sorry, that was dreadful, but...
Oh, whoa!
In the grand scheme
whoa
of things,
what is
know?
Up with that Ginny hatred?
You know what?
It's not Ginny hatred. It's just that she's... I saw Harry casting her off at the end of Half-Blood Prince as a kind of... Joe's way of saying, you know, yes, you are damn important, but you don't have a place in the final book. And she is important, but I've always seen her as a secondary character. And even though she got more important, obviously, with Harry's lustful behavior towards her, you know.
Here's what I think, though. Kind of to continue on what Jamie was talking about her importance, I think the only way she could become more important is if she died.
No.
Yeah.
A lot of people were more significant.
No, I'm saying that the only way Ginny could become more important as a character is if she died, because we've already seen her progress to the point where we're not going to see any more character development from her. We know that she's, you know, gotten out of being shy. We know that she didn't be tough, and we know that she's not afraid to share her feelings with Harry.
There's nothing more in this character unless they die.
No, I just don't think that we...
They can't serve the plot unless they die.
No, I don't think so. What,
Eric, that's absolutely right. Absolutely right, because this whole thing is like a scale. Yeah, but no, but wait. It's like a scale. You know, people. It's a dreadful thing to say, but wars are measured in terms of casualties as well as, you know, who wins and who loses. As and I shouldn't remember. You know, this isn't a great quote, but as Stalin said, one death is a tragedy, but a million deaths is a statistic. And it's a dreadful thing to say, and it isn't true. But in terms of some things. It is true. Whereas, you know, in this war, there are people
who have to die
to fulfill the you know, it being a war. And there are some people, you know, secondary characters who have fulfilled their purpose. And
like
now,
you think Ginny's a goner?
No. I wouldn't be surprised if she died. But people, and I probably shouldn't say this in case he plays a huge part in the next book or something. But Bill Weasley, after his wedding, I don't think we're going to see him again. I don't think he's as important. He's important enough, you know, the wedding is one part of it. But other than that, I don't see what he can do now. It's Harry's fight, after all. And although he's going to have his very, very close friends with him.
Well, the Harry Potter books have this large, so many characters, so many characters that all have to have some kind of a hand in the war. I think, what's the point in having a man who's, you know, commander of the Navy if he doesn't command the Navy? What I'm saying is they don't need to die just to serve the plot. They can be in different positions in government and all have a say in what exactly goes on. You know what I'm saying? They don't need to die just to serve the plot.
Yeah, but some of them do have to die.
Yeah, I understand. Nobody's debating that. I'm saying you're saying that Ginny's only purpose for the plot is to die now because she's developed as a character.
No, I'm not saying
but
that.
But she
isn't
a minor character. That's
no,
the thing.
I'm not saying
like
that,
the
though.
Fourth member of the trio, the quattro.
Well, that's like...
See, what I'm saying is that if we're going to see anything major from Ginny in the next book, it's going to be that she dies, because what else could she do?
Dumbledore told Harry that he can't go it alone, and at the end of Half-Blood Prince, we see he tries to break up with Ginny, or whatever you want to call it, but they're obviously still going to be together, and if he's fallen for her like it appears he has, her dying would absolutely devastate him, so I don't think she will die. I think she'll make it through along with Harry.
Yeah.
And have lots of babies.
I don't know.
Well, Jamie and I were actually discussing at the live podcast in England that, you know, if Ginny does die or Ginny is threatened by, say, Voldemort, that could be one of Harry's leading factors wanting to kill Voldemort.
Yeah,
or
you
someone
use
else.
It as motivation, yeah. Yeah, I think he already does. I mean, he killed his parents. Come on now. That should be enough right there.
What I think what you mean is, like, there has to... Some crimes aren't premeditated, and although this is, obviously, then, you know, there are always things that can spark off one type of, you know, emotion that then overpowers you and does it. Like in law, there's a thing, mens rea, which is to be guilty of a crime, your mind has to be guilty as well. So if you like, one defense is that I don't know what happened, like I completely blacked
insanity,
out due to the anger of the moment. Sorry, yeah. Well, no, it isn't insanity. It's just saying that you weren't responsible for your own actions. It isn't a mental defense.
So what if you were drunk?
No, that isn't an acceptable defense.
What if you were on? What if you were on acid? What if you're on shrooms?
No. That isn't it. It's like it's the criteria is that if a normal human being placed in the same situation,
it was done in the spur of the moment, that type of thing.
It's like
okay, I see what you mean.
It's like if somebody raped your daughter, would any human being kill the person who did it? And if yes, then you aren't guilty of that crime because any normal human would be it. And I've completely lost what we were talking about. But Ginny's thing. Yeah, if Harry. I mean, I would find it. Most people would find it very hard to kill, but and even if your background, you're so against someone, the actual act of killing. You know, as Dumbledore says, killing is harder than the innocent believe. And even if your background is so bad, doing it could be a lot more difficult. So, you know, if he kills Ginny right in front of his eyes, he could be so angry that he can actually do what perhaps he couldn't do if he wasn't. You know, suitably enraged. So right. Perhaps it could just be the catalyst that sparks him off.
And also, she's not just going to kill off characters that aren't going to affect Harry.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There'd be no point.
Yeah. That's a good
Mark
point.
Mark Evans dies and he flies into a rage.
Oh, so she has to kill a bunch of characters that are all close to Harry. Look, she's already done her killing. Can she just get on with the fact he needs to go against Voldemort? And all his friends are actually, you know, this isn't a book about death. J.K. has written and illustrated too many brilliant characters just to kill them all off.
Well, she said so herself.
There will be a large
celebration. There are going to be more deaths. Well, sorry.
Yeah.
Of course there are going to be more deaths, but that doesn't mean that people just have to die for the sake of dying. Come on now.
No. Well,
yeah, but there would be no point in killing people if they weren't important to Harry. There's
right. Well, not necessarily.
Yes, there's
not necessarily.
Tons of reasons
okay,
to kill
so
people.
Okay, so how is Amelia Bones important to Harry?
We're not talking about mentioned deaths. We're talking about deaths that we're actually going to see or encounter or that Harry's going to have to deal with emotionally.
Guys, hold on. Let's stop it at this point because we're at an hour and a half and obviously we can continue this
good
next
idea.
Week. Because, you know, this is way more than... I want to go to bed. This is way more than a...
Jamie, I wish I were there. Cool.
This is a main discussion. Okay, so we will wrap it up. We will leave it at that for today and we'll continue discussing who will live and who will die in book 7 next week on episode 95.
Just say, it's been playing on my mind for a while. For like the last 40 minutes. I didn't actually mean what I was saying at the beginning about Sarah. I just do those rants for the sake of it, to be honest. So I wasn't
angry. It was a joke. People get it's a joke
know,
because
I
then
know,
I told you the
I know,
PS.
But, I know, but I feel guilty. So
well, people know
I
that.
Wasn't
oh,
being,
it was
done very well.
I wasn't being mean even before I heard the PS. I was just joking. So please don't hate me.
Okay, so Laura, let's remind everyone about the contact information before we wrap it up today.
That'll be PO Box 3151, Cumming, Georgia 30028.
If you want to leave a voicemail question for us, you can also dial the MuggleCast phone numbers. We have 1-218-20-MAGIC. If you're in the United States. If you're in the UK, you can dial 020-8144-0677. And if you're in Australia, you can dial 02-8003-5668. You can also Skype the username MuggleCast. Just try to keep your message under a minute long. You can also visit MuggleCast.com for a handy feedback form, or you can contact any one of us or just use our first name at staff@muggle.com.
You missed something out. Very important. And eliminate as much background noise as possible.
Oh, yeah, I'm done with that because most people do it anyway. So we'll try to get back to voicemail soon. There's just a lot of segments that we're trying to do right now, and they often take up a lot of time, so... You know, you can don't forget about the community outlets, MySpace, Facebook, YouTube, Frapper, Last.fm, fan listening forums. I think that is just about it for this week's show. Once again, I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Ben Shane.
I'm Jamie Lawrence.
I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Laura Thompson.
And I'm Mike Atenabow.
We'll see everyone next week for episode 95. Wow. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Your attention, please. This message goes out to a Miss J.K. Rowling. Don't let him beat your lie. No. Not your lie, not your lie, not your lie. Don't let it beat your lie. Here we go. We are hearing this tonight. You're probably gonna start a fight. I know this can't be right. Hey, Rowling, come on. I loved you endlessly when the books were spread out freely. So now it's time to hear some of your most loyal fans. Wait a little more, it ain't no lie. I wanna see you delay that book, don't let it be July. Don't wanna be a fool for you, and just another book in your series for clues. You may hate me, but it ain't no lie. Don't let it be July. Don't really wanna make it tough. I just wanna tell you that I've not had enough. It might sound crazy, but it ain't no lie. Don't let it beat your lie. Alright, don't get it yet? Alright, let's break it down. This may be reminiscent of my MuggleCast rap. Was my number one single, now don't forget. Listen up, Joe. Baby, come on. I want this book a little later, and so does each and every fan that believes the book will be once you've got more time.
I know that I can't drink no more. It ain't no lie. I wanna see you.
Delay that book. Don't let it beat your lie. Don't wanna be a fool for you. And just another book in your series for clues. You may hate me, but it ain't no lie. Don't let it beat your lie. Don't really wanna make it tough. I just wanna tell you that I've not had enough. It might sound crazy, but it ain't no lie. Don't let it beat your lie. You know what? Forget it. I'm giving up, I know for sure. I don't wanna be the reason for next year no more. I'm checking out, I'm signing off. The fandom will be over and I've had enough. Joe, I don't wanna be a fool in this series for clues. So you know what? So I'm leaving you, Joe, behind.
I don't wanna make
don't make it tough, please.
But I've had
Joe,
enough.
Please.
And
Joe.
It ain't no lie.
Not your lie.
Bye-bye. Don't wanna be a fool for you. Just another player in your game for two.
Book 7, please. July 2008. July 2008.
Bye-bye.
Don't really wanna make it tough. I just want to tell you that I've not had enough. Might sound crazy, but it ain't no lie. Don't let it be July.
That's all the news for this... What's the date? I don't even know.
And say, enough said.
Oh, that's so American. I can't say that. Okay, go on then. Okay, oh no, I want to do something else. What do you want me to say?
Whatever. Enough said.
Enough said, Andrew.
That was way too loud.
Okay. No, that was good. Okay.
Shut up, I know what I'm talking about.
Enough said, Andrew.